What is happening, everybody? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and after skipping a week, we are back, and I have a guest today. My gosh, I can't believe I got this guy on the show. It's Eno Saris of The Athletic. Eno,
how you doing?
To see, man.
Good to see you again.
How you doing?
Doing great, doing great. About to have the playoffs. I'm going to be doing a daily podcast through the playoffs over at Rates and Barrels.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Good luck. Good luck.
I'll need it.
I've actually thought about this myself of like, I shut down for the playoffs, right? I'm just in pure preseason mode. Or off-season mode, and no, I thought to myself, man,
to do that.
At some point I want to have like a actually talking about the playoffs and real baseball in this way. And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I need a break. Yeah,
I know, I'm so worn out, dude. Yeah,
oh my gosh,
good. It's good. We'll take a little break after the playoffs, but then we back on for the winter meetings. So
Oh yeah, so I'll be there at the winter meetings. This
nice.
Year. So I'll see you guys there. Obviously, at First Pitch Arizona as well. What I do is I do my top 200 rankings within a week of the season ending. My goal is to get it out by Wednesday, like spend all of Monday just only doing the rank of it, to all of Tuesday just doing all of the writing of it, and then I'm just like, I'm done. Goodbye, you know, and just poof like that, and leave behind maybe like a little wand or a hat or something like that.
I think we tend to like overlearn, you know, in the NCAA, it's called the tournament boost or whatever, mm-hmm. where people sometimes get overdrafted because they, you know, performed well through the tournament. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, that guy, you know, and then, right. Oh, well, it was just a hot, you know, week or two.
Right.
I actually have the earned value calculator up. Do you think Brandon Pfaadt?
Well, right, playoff tax. That's
nope. He didn't make it. He's not a top 50 starter.
Well, there you go. That is a good segue to what we're doing. And yes, no, Jordan Montgomery, by the way.
Yeah, there's another one. Yeah. I had this 12-team team where I was 12-team league, though, where I was really trying to sell Jordan Montgomery all offseason. And nobody.
Oh, my gosh.
And I just had to hold. And it's.
I mean, there is something to be said about. He got his late start and he has been vocal a little bit about that.
But Stell figured it out.
Yeah. Oh, eventually.
Yeah.
As he always does, though. And side note, what was that yesterday? 8 for 24 strikes on the slider. He threw 6 curveballs and yet didn't matter. Like a 46% overall CSW, a 77% CSW on his changeup.
And he literally told me this week that he's not throwing sliders much because he doesn't need it.
But then he threw 24 of them yesterday, but then he threw 33% strikes with them. It's terrible. You need double that. I don't know, but clearly you don't. I don't know.
He doesn't have his slider right now, actually. It's not in terms of shape, and his slider goes in and out. I think that's partly what he's talking
well,
about.
Well, yeah, like, that's what I believe completely. It's just more of like, well, why are you trying the slider that you're not getting? And so the curve, but the thing is,
it must
like,
have been like a scouting report. Though. Also, how many lefties was he facing? Because he says he never faces lefties, and I saw some lefties in that lineup.
Yeah, I would imagine so. He threw actually what, his first two changeups to lefties since like 2017 or something.
Struck out Gunnar Henderson on both of them.
Yeah, I absolutely bonkers. But anyway, today what we're going to be doing, as the segue is completely broken, thank you, Nick. that we're going to talk about guys who are outside of the top 50 starters this year, who we think can be top 50 in 2025. And something I did mention to Eno as he brought this up with me was, well, part of the reason that guys get put into Play to Raiders super high is about volume, is about just how many wins do you get. If you get a lot of wins, doesn't matter. If you have like 10, 12 wins, you're going to be considered pretty much inside that top 50. And there is that consideration. I think I'm going to be at least giving my guys, not necessarily in the bucket of just like, I'm going to take a chance. This guy's going to be top 50, like 45, because it's Jose Quintana, you know, and he's just going to get enough games and maybe he'll get like 11, 12 wins or something. I'm going to do it more of the overall skill set that showcases, hey, look, I am a pitcher that you will like and feel good about next year. But maybe, sure, it'll be like 115 innings and 7 wins or something along those lines. if things don't go well.
The player rater that I'm looking at is the auction calculator over at Fangraphs. And if you take out the SP eligible starters, which really shouldn't be on this list anyway, but what you get is, you know, at the top, especially innings, you know, 180 from Skubal as number one, 172 from Sale number two, Wheeler 186. So, you know, the top 15, the average is about 170 innings, I would say. And then, you know, it's up and down from there. You do have some smaller innings totals guys like Brian Wu, who snuck into the top 25 on this on this running with 110 innings. You've got Bowden Francis and his insane batting average on balls in play and insane really batted ball luck. I mean, every time someone has a tweet where they're like, he hasn't allowed a hit or whatever, you're like, okay.
Yeah, right. Oh my gosh.
That's going to continue.
You're right.
He's 33rd with 92 innings. Yamamoto is surprisingly in the top 40 with 82 innings. But generally, you need at least about 130, 140 innings to get to the top 50.
Yeah, and I do also want to reiterate that I'm not going to be going for, like, I'm not going to be trying to game it where I'm like, oh, he's at 53. So I'm like, yeah. I don't know the exact list that Eno has in front of him, but I'm pretty much saying, like, guys that are not really established, who are really like the breakout ones, like, hey, look, this is someone that we think is really going to take a step forward.
Yeah. I could game it right now. Yeah. Zach Gallen is the 52nd best starter this year. Max Fried is 53, Hunter Brown 54, Logan Webb 56. Oh, yeah. Those are my guys. So,
yeah, the podcast he goes. Over. There's the Eno system. Eno shows. Excuse it. Right. So the whole point of this is to be like, look, who are the ones that you're just completely ignoring or not necessarily ignoring, but hey, look, this is the stuff that's going to be really exciting for us. I'm coming into next year. So, you know, you said you had some names. Who was the first guy you're like, oh, that's the one everyone has to watch out for?
I'm going with Landon Roop.
Oh, and really?
Yes. And it has something to do with the conversation I had with him, because what we're watching right now is someone who is making the transition from relieving to starting, and he's literally sort of adding innings with every outing. And, you know, thanks to now the Stuff Plus logs, game logs on Fangraphs, you can kind of just watch the change happen. And you can see that it mostly affects the fastball. His curveball is really well thought of by Stuff Plus, and the slider is pretty well appreciated, and the change is okay. But the sinker as a reliever was like 110s and 120s, and then as he started to put on the innings, it's dropped more to sort of 97 to 100. But that's pretty good for a sinker, and so I'm giving him an above average fastball, an elite curveball, and two secondaries that work. And the reason why I'm going to throw him in this conversation is that I talked to him and said, have you ever considered a cutter? Because he's got a sinker and a really bad four seam. And you know what he said to me? It was a very good sign. He said,
yes,
number one project in the
yes,
I will come to spring training with a good cutter. And so I don't know what the future lies in the future for Farhan Zaidi and for, you know, the Giants in this offseason. You know, we've talked a lot about Hayden Birdsong, and I'm not out on Birdsong. But I do think that Roop is ahead of at least Mason Black for me. He's ahead of like Tristan Beck for me. He's ahead of Spencer Bivens for me. And so I think the worst case scenario for Roop is he's the sixth starter going into the season next year. And, you know, the average sixth starter gets like 100 innings, you know, 80 to 100 innings. So all I need is a little bit of luck to, like, you know, get him into that next. Or he shows up with a cutter and is just like, no, I'm the guy. And
I just want to go over this really quickly, though. Logan Webb is the only one I see on the Giants that's like going to be a Giant next year. as far as like definitively in this.
Oh, I thought Ray might be. I'm not actually looking at the payroll.
I think Ray. Maybe Ray isn't a free agent until next year. I actually could be wrong on that one. You're right.
Under contract. So okay. You've got Ray. Snell's got a $30 million option. I think he's going to decline it.
Of course he is.
But it's weird because his value proposition on the market is the same as it was last year. He's just a year older.
Well, I mean, at least he established it again. And he also can say like, well, yeah, but I got delayed. You know,
I guess.
I mean, look, if that's a value proposition, then if it's like saying you're defining yourself as being ready for the playoffs and like Dodgers, what are you doing?
Yeah, right. Yeah. The Dodgers would like to have Blake Snell right now.
Right.
I would just be like, Snell, come on, take the Robbie Ray plus, take the Gossman plus, give me, you know, 5 years, $130 million and just be on my team. And I'll get 3 great years out of you.
Right.
I think Ray will be on the team. Webb will be on the team. So you're right. So even if Hicks goes back to starting, even if they sign another two guys, it's Kyle Harrison. I mean, really, you know, I would say it's Ray, Webb, and Harrison. And then I don't know. Hicks could probably stay in the bullpen or I don't know. We'll see.
So
that's four.
I've got something fun for you.
Even if they sign a free agent, that's five. I think the group is six, you know?
Yeah, I definitely see that. So I have a comp for Rupp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who would you say is the best comp for Rupp right now?
Sinker curve guy.
Yeah, I'm going to be kind of stretching that a little. Mm. A little same concept-ish, but not exactly sinker curve.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm that
here's
awake.
The funny part is that he's actually going up against his comp in his next game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's going to be the wonderful Spider-Man pointing meme, in my view.
Yeah.
On the Royals.
It's not Waka. Lugo?
No, not Lugo.
Wait,
it's
why?
Not Reagan.
Singer?
Yeah.
Oh.
Thinker breaking ball guy. Where
Singer's stuff never rated as well.
The slider, I guess. Yeah, right. It doesn't surprise me that the slider rated relatively differently than the curveball for Rupp. But I see kind of the same approach as of right now. And I would love if Rupp got the cutter working. That sounds awesome to me. I'm always like, I think there's a conversation that you and I had back in March that really has just stuck with me throughout the year. And it's funny because the guy that we hinted that we might not like about it actually is going through that problem. And that's Nick Pivetta. And that is about arm angle and pitch type and pitch selection, everything like that, where you can throw. And this is something I've talked to scouts about, too, is about arm action, meaning that they can throw this pitch or they throw that pitch, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And with Pivetta, he's so over the top that if you pair that with a sweeper, you got to be on the side of it so much. And that doesn't really work, right? It's like you want to be it straight up with the four seamer and then you want to be 90 degrees over, essentially.
I've talked to other pitchers that agreed with me that the Pivetta sweeper thing was a little bit weird.
Right. And if you actually look at his splits for right-handed versus left-handed four-seamer performances, four-seamer is way higher as far as batting average allowed and all the WOBA and everything against right-handers because he goes two-pitch. He goes four-seamer sweeper. And I think it's because it's easier to tell the difference between the sweeper and the four-seamer coming out of Pivetta's hand as opposed to the lefties who see four-seamer and curveball. So when I started to extend it a little bit more to being like, all right, cutters, what is the better arm slot for a cutter? I generally want to think that over the top is better because you don't really want to come around a cutter as much. You kind of want to just move the ball slightly and just go straight over the top still. If you're on the side of it, I feel like you'll get too much, like you won't really get behind it enough to really get the cut that you want on the extension of it, kind of like a changeup you have to get out or completely pronate it to get seam shifted wake on it. So I wonder if like it took so long for Clark Schmidt to get a cutter. Finally, he has one, but it took him a long time to really find one that he likes. And it's because he is that lower arm angle kind of sinker first bad four seamer guy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought in my head, like, is it, you know, since you've had that conversation with me, it's been hanging there, but really in the past couple of weeks, I've really been thinking hard about like, are cutter guys better as four seamer types or sinker types, you know, as far as arm angle goes? And so I hear that. I'm going, okay, I hope that Rupp can get that, because you're right. You throw a sinker, you need the opposite sinker for lefties, right? And that would be the cutter. So
yeah, I mean, the part that's weird for me is that there's some aspect to pronating and supinating that if you're a supinator and yep. you can pull down on your index finger well,
or your papillon, you're both. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a supinator, apparently that can be good for the cutter.
Right. Exactly what I'm getting at. So like a pronator, I think is more of a four seamer guy. Supinator guy is more of the spin guy.
Yes.
Right.
Oh. No. Oh yeah. So I've heard if you're a pronator, you can actually be good at the cutter. The cutter actually.
Right. That's what I'm getting.
People
at.
Who are good at changeups are good right, at cutters. Right.
Yes.
People are good.
Right.
At
you're saying that cutter is good at supinating. I'm saying no. I initially said yes. Right. No. I'm. That's more of a slider
I
thing.
I messed
cutter.
It up.
You want to be tighter. Pronating.
Pronators are good at cutters. I think.
That makes sense to me.
That makes sense to you.
Yes, because what you're doing is, if you're a pronator, that means you're going to be more over the top on the delivery of it.
Oh, and you won't get on the side.
Which means you don't really want to be on the side of it.
You
because like, it goes back to talking to Gallon and being like, do you throw a cutter or a slider? What is it? It goes, it's a slider, but I have to tell myself it's a cutter because I have to stay on top of it.
I try to stay on the side. So he's more of a supinator because he's got multiple breaking
right,
balls.
So he needs to make sure that he doesn't
curl it, right?
Yeah, so, okay, I mean, this is just me like spitballing here, and there are going to be, I'm sure, all these examples I'm going to think of. Like,
but I think there's a natural grouping of pitches. Yep. What you're talking about, the natural grouping of pitches of like cutter, change, sinker.
Right. Cutter, change, sinker. Oh, natural of like movement profile.
I think in terms of people being good at those three things.
But if you're a pronator as opposed to a supinator, is that a sinker thing? Like, is pronating soup? No, I think more supinator is more sinker. Pronator is more forcing.
You're right. Sinker, right. Slider.
Right. I don't know. I mean, look, it's all nuance. It's not like you can't do one or the other.
And it's also like
I'm starting to think about more and more these days.
In terms of developing a pitcher that works today, if you're a sinker first guy, there are sinker cutter changeup guys. I mean, it's not working for Wisniewski. It's working a little bit better for Clark Schmidt. Michael King is sort of like that, you know. Yeah. There's guys.
God, he's so good.
There's guys you could watch. I did. There was a thing that came out that you know, with Duvall and how he, you know, went down and he was like, oh, maybe I should. They had some quote. He's like, oh, I think I'll try and listen to the coaches now. And you're like, yeah. And apparently, one thing was that he like never watched anybody.
Wow.
Pitch, and so he never was like curious about like other people with my kind of stuff. And somebody's like, why don't you watch some Class A? And he's like, why? And he's like, well, because you could be Class A, you know. Like, instead you're just not as good.
Instead you're just Class B.
Nice. But anyway, so I think that there's I'm double checking your comp, and I'm not taking it.
Okay.
Because Rupp has 4 inches more horizontal on his sinker than Brady Singer, and 4 inches more horizontal on his curveball.
Not surprised about the curve. But that's interesting that he has a lot more horizontal on the sinker. That could be a much more
and less extension,
right-handers.
Which is not great, but I think he's one of those guys who cuts it off to move it. And so it's a real east-west thing. So the cutter is also something that won't move as much east-west. So it's a little bit like Matt Brash, you know, with command, maybe.
Oh.
That's sort of a little sort of baby Matt Brash with that command. I mean, he doesn't have the same velo, but he's pretty good.
Yeah.
94-4. So, yeah.
Is this like what Charlie Morton wants to be? There you go.
Yeah, a little bit. Some more.
A little bit.
Some Morton aspects. Yeah.
You know, because Morton certainly actually has a cutter in there.
But Morton's four seam was passable, whereas Rupp's is not. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anyway, that's a fun one to look at for next year. I you know, I was a little curious about Mason Black, because I think Mason Black's four seamer shape is, if I remember correctly, I got to look it up again, is kind of interesting, has some moments. At least it's with either extension or it's with its flatness, something along those lines. that made me like, oh, Mason Black, maybe there's a something there. But
I was told like when he was coming up to like watch out for him.
And, what is he going to take your purse? Okay,
no.
Watch out for that guy.
That he'd be good, but and that he had a two-plane fastball. What I'm seeing, yeah, he's one of those kind of ones where the vert matches the horizontal.
Mm.
So the fastball's not bad. It's just I'm not sure he has the full arsenal, you know.
Yeah, he's got a 92nd percentile horizontal break on his four-seamer.
Yeah,
And a ton on his sinker.
And it's also just 92, so you know.
Yeah, that's never fun. All right. Well, I'm gonna bring up a couple other young names for you guys, and I have an older one later. And we'll talk about all of that after this break. So I can't decide which one I want to do first because both of them are a good segue. I'm going to go with Brent Herter of the Tigers, which I completely wrote off. I was like, whatever, this is a Toby at best from the left side. He's only following whatever. You know, this is bonkers to me. Okay. His sinker across both righties and lefties is a PLV darling. We never get sinkers as PLV darlings, all right? Against all both right-handers and left-handers, Brent Herter's sinker has an 82% strike rate, which is, yes, that is 100th percentile, but it also has a 547 PLV, which is 94th. And against left-handers, this is the most ridiculous stat to me. We have this stat, ICR, which is essentially across all sinkers in the majors for starting pitchers, 39% ICR is ideal contact rate. You know, whenever a hitter makes contact with it, is it good or bad for the hitter? It's ideal. Yay, that's high number. Low is good for the pitcher. 15% for lefties on this sinker. Like, that's insane. This Brent Herter's sinker against lefties has a 15% ICR. And you're like, well, then he's just throwing it inside all the time. No, it's about a 70% zone rate. An 80% strike rate. And it's still
crazy.
That's insane. It's PLV against lefties is 592. Like, that's the equivalent of a Jacob deGrom slider.
Yeah, but he's a lefty who's sinker first. You know, it doesn't make you nervous. It's so weird.
It blows my mind. But the thing is also that I actually really do appreciate about him, he's a sweeper changeup guy. He keeps them low. Like, they just hang out down. You know, a lot of these times I see guys that are lefties are trying to figure it out against righties or really just opposite-handed sweepers or so.
So he's throwing lefty sinkers low to righties?
Just, he doesn't keep his sinker low that much. It's like both. It's actually only 20% low lock against sinker, against lefties. And against righties, this sinker is much higher, 34%. But it's just, it's strange. I've not seen this before. And I was so quick to just push this away and just go like, all right, this guy doesn't throw too hard. He's a low, you know, it's like 93 miles per hour, this sinker. But it is such an extreme of success with this. And we just saw him flirt with perfection against the Orioles, right? That which is a whole another tangent about how much I hate having openers in the first place, because you remove a singular person having a perfect game. But
that's out the door anyway.
I just hate it. The joy of every child and from Little League is that when they start a game, they could do something historic, you know, and you just remove it the second you have an opener. It's just gone. The thrill, the joy. Am I at the park? I don't want a combined no hitter. Everyone's already forgotten about what the Cubs did. No one remembers that.
What if you could win a game in 8 innings if your pitcher is throwing a perfect game?
Oh my God, don't do this to me.
I'm just trying to figure out how to bring this back without, I mean, in the modern era, like we've had like combined no hitter this year.
I know, but like no one remembers.
I can't even remember who threw it. No one cares.
No one cares. And that's a problem. And it's like, why do not people not care? Because it's not the magical singular hero.
I remember the first time it happened. I think like Kent Merker was involved. It was with the Braves. The first time it happened in my fandom, and I was like, "The Braves got a no hitter." The Braves, all of them.
it's one of the rare moments in baseball where we celebrate the individual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like the real thing that this person did something. Let's look at them, not the team winning. Sure, they hit a home run or something. That's great. But like, it's a whole team victory. And also this and also that. No, David Cohn threw a perfect game. We know this. Oh, my gosh. We know the name Philip Humber. Okay.
Yeah, we know the name Philip Humber.
Right? Felix Hernandez making his pose after his, like, with that curveball down. It was, oh, those are such unbelievable moments that are, I think, are stripped away because of the stupid thing.
Herder makes me nervous because he's a lefty throwing sinkers to righties. The four-seam looks bad. But one thing I do remember was that when we were looking at the stickiness of locations year to year, because he looks like an extreme strike thrower, like you've mentioned with the zone percentage and everything.
Yeah.
When we looked at this extremes, like the best, if we took the really worst location plus guys out, there was more stickiness year to year. So really what you find is there at the very bottom, you find relievers or guys who are hurt, you know, or guys
who boil strays. Yep.
Or guys who take a big leap forward, you know, like a Pepio, you know? And so you will find guys at the very bottom that are not sticky, but you know, like Aaron Nola's location plus year to year has been very sticky. He has established that he has great command, and he has it every year. Even in the years where he's not as good, he still has good command.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not
truly buying it works, either. You know,
it works. It works in the spirit of what we're doing today. I take Roop over Herder, but this is exactly the type of pitcher we're talking about. We're talking about sort of end game ideas and guys that could jump in there. Both of our guys have good home parks, right?
That is true. And you know, look, I just can't get over this of like Herder has been so boring. but it is so interesting to me. I mentioned it with Jack Kochanowicz, the jack of one trade, where he's just sinkers and he's having success in a major league way, not necessarily a fantasy baseball way. You're playing that, but going six innings for 300 runs is great if you're the Angels, you know.
That's such really cool. A weird story, too. 71 and a third innings with a 5.80 ERA in AAA before he came up and does it.
That's so wild.
Little update. Yeah. The Tigers were just in town, and I interviewed Casey Mize. We talked about stuff plus, and we talked about his array of pitches, and he admitted something to me, which I haven't heard a lot of people just sort of say straight up. I don't have a feel for spin, he said. Which immediately made my stomach take a flip flop and go, oh, no, don't say that.
Well, I mean, right. But also, like, I love that he's aware of this and he's speaking that language, you know?
Yeah. You know, he said to me, like, oh, what I need to do is throw my breaking ball hard. And, you know, he threw his slider 88.5 in the last game. Is exactly what he's been trying to do.
Three picks up on the slider and the splitter.
I was looking at the numbers and I was like, as long as you don't lose a lot of movement, he retained most of his movement, even with the velo increase. So, this is like a kind of a 0-0 slider, right? Mm-hmm. At 88, you know, stuff says it's good. Right. And I know he doesn't say he doesn't have a great feel for spin, but stuff says this is at least an average slider. And I'm going to give him I'm going to give him a plus splitter and a good four seam. So, you know, it seems like most things are there for him. I really do think that he could put it all together. And this is maybe a little bit of class above the guys we're talking about today, where he's a guy who's going to have a job. He's going to be, he's probably going to be okay, I think, next year. But there's a little bit of a chance that he breaks out. So I just wanted to mention that. The problem, I think, what ends up with the feel for spin is that he doesn't locate his slider very well.
Yeah, this is actually a thing that I saw when he first came up. I was really impressed with that more cutter-esque slider that he was spotting this pitch. I call it the golden pitch for Mize, when he was like sinker, cutter, splitter. And I was like, the cutter was
earlier
like
in the year, it was a little bit better, but now he's throwing it harder. He's getting a lot worse. So,
well, I kind of took yesterday as like a, hey, I'm just going to throw harder with everything. It was like also at 97, essentially, with his four seamer. And just like, let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, some and guys just go good out there and, until, and they don't focus on other stuff.
It was a good start until in the fifth inning, he walked the bases loaded.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
so he's someone definitely to consider as well. Just like follow how he's doing and see what spring brings as well. And see if there's a, I mean, honestly, I would just take a cutter with that good four seamer. As long as you can locate the four seamer well and keep the extension high on that. And
yeah. And I think if you were sort of physically scouting him, I also asked him like, could you Kevin Gausman it?
Sure.
And he was like, I just don't know. You know, Kevin Gausman has like a real special feel for his splitter, you know? And he's like, I'm not sure I could really kind of go 50-50 fastball splitter. I was like, Nick is in my ear right now.
I don't know what you're talking about, Eno.
Yeah. It also made me think of our ongoing conversation of like, you know, who's the best pitcher who doesn't have a slider?
Yeah.
And it is right? Kevin Gausman.
Is it?
Probably.
I mean, it was Snell, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, right? It is such a weird. I mean, I just saw Wheeler go 77% fastballs yesterday and just dominate. Like, he has one, but does he have one?
He has like three sliders.
Yeah, like sweeper, slider, and it's like the cutter is, yeah, right. But they're all just like, they exist. You know, I mean, Gausman technically has a slider. It's very bad, but it's very bad. You know? So who would be the next guy that you wanted to bring up today? Top 50 next year, who's well outside of it this year?
Tyler Megill.
One
of the
there's things, a guy who needs a slider.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Let me see what
I mean. It's
extension. Yeah, it's blade. Really inconsistent. Wow, that is crazy.
He had a cutter for a moment, and it was like really exciting. I want to say like a month or two ago. And then all of a sudden, like he didn't have it in the first and stopped throwing it. And then I think he got removed from it. And we haven't really seen it dominate since.
Well, the few things that I have to say are just that he's developed a sinker. So now he's a three fastball guy. And since he came back from injury, he's showing the best velo of the season, which he does have decent movement, but it's fairly vanilla for his arm slot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's I would say it's a above average four seam, an average sinker, probably maybe above average, average cutter. The splitter looks pretty good by stuff less since he's come back, and I don't know why. I guess he's throwing it harder, which I think is good. And
please call it by its proper name, you know,
the American, what is it?
Spork. Thank you very much. Yeah.
It's not dropping as much, but it's harder. And then lastly, the slider has been much more consistent in terms of movement and locations and velo since he came back. So, I mean, we're talking about a guy, if I just go with old school stats, 96 mile an hour four seam, 91 mile an hour cutter, 85 mile an hour slider, and then an 86 mile an hour splitter. I don't know. I see all the tools there. You know, I think one of the things that just makes me nervous is the innings number, because he's just had a hard time kind of keeping that velo and staying healthy. Last year, he had 126 innings, and this year he's going to pass 100, 120 maybe. Well, I think
that's a little bit more so because of how the Mets have not needed him. And he wasn't really in the rotation unless they needed him, right? He was number six for a bit.
Yeah. You know, in terms of what the Mets rotation will look like next year, they could spend money. It's a team that could always spend money. But they've got Kodai Senga under contract for next year. Sean Manaea is coming back. Quintana Severino are gone.
David Peterson, who's done
David absurdly. Peterson is there. So that's three guys.
Scott will be fighting for it too, but then again, he's on. You know, I believe it's Tommy John, correct? Last time I heard is just like a lot of there were elbow things, and I just haven't heard since.
Here. No, he is throwing pitches again. He avoided the surgery, but yeah, you know, so I mean, he's in the mix with Scott, and I think Peterson, although I like him, he did have the year last year with 5 ERA. So like, and then the year before in 2021 was a 5 ERA. So
it's so interesting with Peterson.
He comes and goes.
Well, he's in a rhythm right now of actually locating four seamers up.
Yes, he has bad command, and some years he has okay command.
You know, when he has these good performances, like just against the Phillies, like, yeah, it's pitch separation, place on blueprint, heaters up, slow stuff down. The thing is, he used to have this slider that was like a 25% swing strike rate. And that's kind of gone to the wayside more for changeup, which is fine. I'm actually like always encouraged by lefties having productive changeups. I feel like that's, we talk about it's being a slider league. That's because it's just right hand focused. But if you're a lefty, it's a changeup league in my view.
If you're looking at his stuff plus, it probably should be 6 to 8 points higher. It's at 94 right now. It probably should be over 100 because of the lefty effect that we will we will erase that in the off season. So
that's interesting. That's cool. But yeah, Peterson, I don't quite buy. I call him a Baja man, which is a one hit summer wonder.
I mean, he could have a 5 ERA next year and be out.
Yeah.
So.
Right. So back to Tyler McGill, though, he's in this bucket of guys that throw essentially, if you throw like 94 plus with elite extension, I mean like elite, not just 7 feet, but 7.2, 7.3 above. And he's like 7.5.
Yeah.
And that's like Bailey Ober kind of territory. Thing about Ober is that he has an elite changeup also, and he's also added a solid cutter and slider on top of it, which is how he's taken his next step. And the big thing for me has always been, is there another element for Tyler McGill, for someone that also hasn't really consistently sat upstairs like Ober has, right, with that four seamer? Like, it's sometimes all over the place a little bit, and he has like it exists, that cutter and slider. But there's nothing that I say, oh man, no, not the fastball. Yeah, give me that changeup. I want to see that. You know, that isn't quite there for McGill, and it's not the most overwhelming fastball. But something that I've certainly learned on this podcast this year is the impact of having two separate heaters.
Yeah.
Sinker with a four seamer is benefiting a lot of guys. We saw that with the Mariners in 2023, but it's been more so amplified this year across the league.
And there's a big difference between his fastballs. I mean, it's 8 inches of vert and 10 inches of horizontal between his four seam and his sinker. So it's not one of those things where it's like, you know, slightly different pitches. They're different pitches, and the cutter's right in between. So it's, you know, it's a good three fastball mix. And I don't think he's, you know, Casey Mize, where he lacks a feel for spin. Like the slider looks good enough for me.
Yeah.
And
I dig this. Maybe I'll whip out my Ty Lord McGill shirt some more.
the over at Alex Chamberlain's site, they say he has 8 pitches, which I don't think is correct, but you know, maybe he does. Maybe he has a sweeper, a slider, a curve, a sinker, a four seam, a cutter, a splitter, and a regular slider and a regular change. But I'm guessing the changeup is the same thing as the splitter.
So this has been a weird moment of me having strange comps here and there.
Yeah.
You just reminded me of someone I have comped to Chris Bassett, and I call them the harder Chris Bassett, which is strange. It's 6 pitches. It's not 9, but this is a guy who yesterday earned 15 called strikes and about 50 fastballs between four seamers and sinkers. Kind of doesn't have that outwardly, like, this is what I'm going to do every day. Throws an array of secondaries that sometimes work, sometimes don't. You don't really know what's going to be there. He sits about anywhere from like 95 to 97 on a given night. Who would this guy be, Eno Saris? Do you know who this comp is?
Hunter Brown?
Yeah, it's Hunter Brown.
That's right. I was watching that start.
A harder Chris Bassett. That's what I have right now.
That is so weird. Do you know how far that is from what people thought he was coming up?
Right? Verlander.
he went from a Verlander but wild to Chris Bassett but hard.
Yeah, right. But that's a good thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's
I'd
pretty
rather
wide
be a harder Chris Bassett than a wild Verlander.
And also, you know, the slider that he was throwing, I was a little bit worried was going to be injurious because the slider that he was throwing before in 2023 Oh, that's not okay. So it's the cutter that's 92.
Yeah.
Okay. So he has a gyro slider that's 86, 87.
Yeah. Okay. And then he has a cutter as well. And then
that doesn't worry me, but the cutter that he has, does have a little bit more drop, or used to have a little bit more drop than your average cutter. So it was kind of a power slider. He's actually changed that. This year it has less drop and it's more of a traditional cutter.
Okay.
Which I just wanted to mention that because it bothers me a little bit when someone throws the DeGrom slider because DeGrom.
Well, yeah, because, you know, and Syndergaard and Mats and
yeah, and all of them. But yeah, now Hunter Brown has three legit fastballs. He mixes them up, and I guess his major out pitch is the curve, which is a really good one.
I mean, sometimes it's the four seamer. He actually has an above average swing strike rate on that. So it's like 11%, 12%, something along those lines. I guess it's not really above average. It's average, but it's weird. It goes back and forth. It used to be like on all four seamers are now like 12, 13. But then I feel like it's gone down this year because everyone's just then focusing on four seamers more than sinkers. Or I don't know. It league trends, guys. It's good enough that you can get swing strike rates. You can get whiffs on the four seamer with Hunter Brown. But yeah, I don't know. He's been such a guy this year that is like, I don't know what you're going to do. I can't really say like, oh man, I'm excited to watch Hunter Brown do this, because one night it's just like, I'm just going to throw all the sinkers all the time. I don't care. Oh no, I'm just going to be four seamer and cutter tonight. I'm going to go curveballs a lot. Like, I don't know, but it just works a lot. Like, he took down the Padres even. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll take it, I guess. So that's just a weird comp I want to throw your way. I've got another guy I want to talk about.
Wait, I wanted to throw an idea out there, and I don't want to talk about Bobby Miller. We've talked a lot about Bobby Miller.
But he's going to be inside the top 50 next year, yes.
No, I think Bobby Miller should watch Hunter Brown video.
Oh.
I think it might be interesting because Bobby, like, the debate is whether or not Bobby Miller has good command, bad command. That was the debate about Hunter Brown. You know, Bobby Miller's stats are fairly similar. Bobby Miller has 6.9 extension, Hunter Brown 6.66. Hunter Brown has 17.5 vert, Bobby Miller has 16.3. Bobby Miller has a little bit more tail to his fastball. They both throw hard. They both had this, like, they both have similar arsenals, four seam, sinker, cutter, curve. So, like, I don't know. I just think that, you know, the fact that Hunter Brown had this, like, you know, oh, he has no command. He can't do this. And then, well, instead of being like, no, I have command, he was like, no, I have a sinker. And then it all worked. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe. Bobby Miller, what's so funny is we have this Fan 4 Plus thing, right? Which is our PLB model saying, like, look, is this going to be a whiff or not? That's our prediction. Mm-hmm. I've seen Jared Jones be the only pitcher to go above 150 on a given night. He's done it twice until Bobby Miller did it across 10 four seamers yesterday. But the location, but it's just what? I don't know. I mean, with Bobby Miller, it's
I think he just can't command some of his pitch or can't do what
he's a thrower, not a pitcher.
Yes. And that's what I think what people said about Hunter Brown. So just to see this so much come together for Hunter Brown. And the other thing that I think of with Bobby is like, I know he's not gonna be one of my number one sleepers. He might be in this list of pitchers where I will actually maybe take some shots on Bobby next year where it doesn't cost me as much.
Right.
But one of the things that I noticed this year, there is not a single pitcher qualified for the ERA title that's under 25 years old.
What? Oh, because of innings. Yeah.
But not only because of innings. My theory is that in the age of Stuff Plus coaching, which we are right in the middle of, is that there's a lot of, like, you know, pitch design and throwing harder, right? And this might be the most sort of old man take that I have, which is just that we focus on the parts, you know, so much. And then they get to the big leagues and they're like, oh, how does the whole fit together? You know, how do I do this? How do I go 6-7 innings against major league hitters? And it's something you can't really practice in the minors, because in the minors, if you throw good stuff,
it works.
It works. Yeah. And in the majors, it's like, oh yeah, you've got good stuff. there's like 20 guys behind you,
you know,
and you put them together. I mean, just think of how long it's taken Clark Schmidt to find something that worked, or you know what I mean? Like how, you just know. Think of Michael King's career. Have you looked at his career logs? Like what his career has been? Like, he was a starter.
Really good point.
He was a starter in the Marlins. He became a reliever, you know, this whole thing. So
do you remember my preseason mantra this year?
Mm-hmm.
Command is the market inefficiency.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, we're on the same page.
Right, right. I think if I'm going to bet on a young pitcher, like especially one that's debuting, like that will, I still hesitate to like make my bets every year based on command, which can mm-hmm. kind of go and come, but especially yeah. since we're talking about Herder, or you know somebody else where that's so much like I, that's not my preference in terms of sleepers, is a guy who's maybe more on command.
Could not agree more.
But if you're talking about a young guy breaking in and you're looking at like Shane Boz or Taj Bradley, or you know, a lot of these young guys that have come up, even Hunter Green,
yeah,
and had great stuff, but have taken a Jack while Leiter. To establish themselves. You're right. I think if I'm going to bet on a debut next year, you know, I want them to have good command.
And that's actually, you know, it's funny because Kumar Rocker certainly was a stuff guy, and he would be on this list for me as like, I'm certainly circling Kumar Rocker for next year.
That's an easy circle, yeah.
Yeah, because the thing is, he was on such a heater rolling up to that debut, and that was not like, I have such good stuff, I'm overwhelming them. No, he's like actually executing what he wants to do in the zone. He's doing this thing correctly, not like, here's a scatter plot, I'm going to throw like 60% strikes, but doesn't matter, that's good enough. Like, no, this was 65-70%, doing all the things
you
right.
You did came see up to the
Mariners and did that. And he had moments of like spiked ones and all this stuff. I was like, ah, but then he actually would really be into a rhythm again with it, which is typical for an MLB debut. But I felt like, oh, Kumar has a really nice calm delivery, which I love. Oh my gosh, I love it. So many like Rhett Lauder ridiculousness. Just hey.
Yeah, but the one thing about Rocker though is that his four seams a sinker. Like he throws a sinker. And you saw what the lefties did, right?
Yeah.
The lefties waited him out. He only had two walks. So I agree with you that he has good command, but the two walks were against lefties. So that's not, and he was trying to execute and he was executing. But, you know, I asked recently at Mize, I asked him, you know, a question, and he had such a good answer. I just felt like so dumb when he said it. Because I've written about this before, like, why do sinkers and changeups have similar movement profiles, but sinkers are terrible opposite hand and changeups are good? And he's just like, because everyone's trying to be on the heater. And if I try to throw you an inside, the front door heater, and I miss, it leaks over the middle of the plate. So they're in swing mode and they want to get that. And then, you know, if I try to throw the one out over the plate, it's going away out. It's going strike to ball, you know. Right. And so that's either going ball to happy zone or strike to ball. And they can see it the whole way where it just they see all that movement. So
that's a great point. The other aspect I thought you were going to mention with that is the velocity difference in general and how it's so much easier in a velocity difference, or if you like timing for one or the other, inside versus outside. So like change up being away, you're pulling towards yourself as a lefty, you know, so it's even harder if you are trying to slow it down to get the one away.
Yeah, just do that swing in your head and be like, okay, I'm slowing my hands down, I'm gonna get
right, like, but your whole body's pulling away from the away, you know.
You'd have to be one of those guys who could like throw the bat out there and just sort of
I have a tangent. I actually really want to talk to you about that Kumar Rocker thing. I totally am with you. Uh-huh. And I want to bring that up right after this break. This is something that I've been meaning to go to Kyle Bland about, and I haven't. Sorry, Kyle. I know you're listening right now. Could have been you first. That's on me. So, guys with high velocity and extreme drop on their four-seamer, that is made for low-ball fastballs.
You think Kumar Rocker should throw more low?
This is just me like thinking about physics, just like how everything's going on. Because if I'm a hitter, and I'm trying to get the low fastball, my bat is above the ball as I go down, right?
Instead of
below it, which I'm going up, my bat is above the ball. So when you're late, right, the bat isn't going to be underneath the ball, it's going to be above it. So if I'm late on it, the bat is actually further away from the ball than I am if I'm timed. But if it's going up, if I'm late on it, then the bat is actually closer to the ball because it's dropping down into it, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm late on a hard pitch down, that's even harder for me to hit it if it's dropping.
The
right?
only retort I have is filleting it.
Right, just dropping the barrel.
Like filleting it, like going opposite field.
Oh, I see. Pushing it out.
So then you're like below the ball, but you're like slicing it. But, you know, there's not a lot of hitters that can do that.
I mean, if that's happening, then that means that's a ground ball pitch.
Or it could be an opposite field single.
Sure. I'll take opposite field singles all day.
It's probably not a homer, yeah.
And I think actually this was the Skeens thing.
Ron Alvarez might hit it for a homer.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Soto will do damage. Fine.
Yeah.
As my old coach would say, bless him. Bless him. Yeah, that was actually like basketball when like we were doing traps in the corner. And if the guy can like jump back and throw it over that, bless him.
Like basically you did the right job. Don't worry about it.
He's going to do that. Job. Who cares? Yeah. You know? but right. So Skeens was like this. Skeens is the one that got me thinking about this because he has a very extreme one. And it was such a negative. There's that bell curve that we've talked about of the really the big idiots and the super smart guys in the middle. Everyone's like, oh no, he doesn't have enough vert. He's not going to be good enough. Everyone's like, he throws really hard. Who cares? Skeens has had a lot of success down. And actually, when he tried to do the Blake Snell blueprint of forcing his up, it didn't get as many whiffs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what?
It's falling to the bat. Yeah.
It goes back down into it. But if it's low, it's going to go underneath it, I think.
You have to do it enough. It's like when you have a high vert four seam, you do want to live above the zone or high in the zone because it's going above the bat. But every once in a while you can throw one down and they'll take it because they're like, ew,
that's the Gallen method.
And then it comes back up into the zone. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing is like Kumar can still go upstairs, like two strikes, bam, there it is, you know, whatever. Just surprise them with
that. Or throw it above the zone. Yeah, but it's like it's a term about swing and take counts, right?
Yeah.
If you think it's a take count, throw a high four seam that drops into the zone.
Right.
If it's a swing count, don't throw it low.
Yeah, just it's so against everything I'm saying. If you have a four seam, throw it upstairs. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this is, but if it's high velocity and it's got drop, then like, no.
Yeah. I think Kumar, you know, and he shows enough field with that. I thought he kind of varied the shape a little bit intentionally on the breaking ball too.
Mm.
So that'd be cool. I thought he had pretty good feel. And one way you can, if you're just playing along at home, like, and it's not perfect, but like if you have a guy who has a 4 or 5% walk rate in the minors, like they probably have good command.
Yeah. Well, 100%.
I mean, it's not perfect, but like, you know,
I mean, I've certainly been fortunate to have our minor league PLV app up so I can, like, for example, like Jackson Jones' start was not very impressive.
Really?
Interplay? It was like a 506 PLV on the four seamer with like fine, but not elite four seamer anything.
Oh, where's and I'm my like, shiny?
And I was like,
give me my shiny.
But we use Streamlit, thank you. Take the shiny out of here. But yeah, Job's start wasn't as good. The slider wasn't as good, and we're like, it was at 96. It wasn't like a 98 or something. But it was one AAA start, fine. But being able to see a lot of these guys when they're coming up,
the end of the year for him a little bit.
I can see it. Yeah, it could exactly be that. I mean, there was an injury that slowed him down, but still could be the same thing.
Okay, hold on. I just need to see. I haven't checked this yet. Oh, come on. The Stuff Plus was excellent. I mean, I've got 110s above on everything, 115s and above on everything.
Okay,
but
good.
Bad location on the cutter. And you're right. 96 on the four seam is
what's the extension? Oh, it was 6 feet of extension, you know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Stuff Plus.
That's scary.
I don't see location numbers where I'm worried yet. Although 95 location on the slider is not good, but you know, it was one.
The
start,
the last 22. Fastball I liked that had like a 6 feet of extension or worse was Hunter Greens. And I think he even got more of it back. But I don't know. 6 feet of extension is the number that scared me the most because I haven't seen that one before for Job. But I could just be spooked and stupid.
Yikes.
What?
Yikes.
What?
One of the this is blue ball. Oh God!
What were you doing?
I was looking at the comps for his fastball, and Spencer Howard was on it. The default name on our shiny is AJ Blueball, who I don't even know who that is. Okay, so I've got comps. Yeah, I've got extension 6.02. You're right. Yikes. And the closest in our closest comps based on PFX Z, like movement, velocity, and extension and release point. The closest comps are Prelander Baroa and Connor Phillips.
You're going to go Prelander Baroa on me right now?
I mean,
no.
If you had Prelander Baroa, like,
I'm joking about Prelander because all of them remember me from the preseason.
I know,
like,
but I'm about to do the Wicked Witch of the East, bro, on you.
Yeah. You know, he was wrong. That guy actually lost.
If you give Prelander Baroa 50 command, he would be good, bro.
He was the wrong. Like, that's the funniest part about the whole thing. That dude was wrong.
What?
He was saying, I don't remember what it was, but it was like the argument of like they're both witches or they're not. Oh. And he was wrong.
Right. He was wrong?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even know what he was saying. He was saying like the Wicked Witch of the East was also a witch, or he was saying,
yeah, something like the Wicked Witch of the East, bro.
Yeah.
It's so good. Oh my God.
Anyway,
it's so good.
But I'm saying if you gave Connor Phillips or Prelander Baroa 50 command, like they would be a lot better than they are.
Yeah. Well, right.
Yeah, so it's not terrible cops is my point, is all I'm saying.
Prelander Baroa was a guy that like I wanted to just get a chance to start because yeah, he just throws so hard and so good, and the slider is ridiculous. I'm like, here's a four seamer slider guy, and obviously the command isn't good enough, but it was just for me as like, look, I understand the command isn't good enough. I was doing my best Eno hat of like, yes, I know command great, maybe there's a small tweak and all of a sudden it's good enough that the stuff just takes over and he gets a chance. Let's just like, he's literally just untouched everywhere. Just be aware. And yeah, then no. Maybe one day. Maybe. Was he in the Royals now? Is that what it is? Is he in the Royals? I think so.
What? Prelander Baroa?
He was traded in like the spring or something like that.
No, White Sox, dude.
Oh, White Sox. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. Okay. I actually have a White Sox on here.
Me too. Maybe the same one. Probably the same one.
I don't know. Because there are a couple you could choose, but choose from. Okay. All right. I'm going to play Guess Who. All right. Do you have a good stuff four seamer?
Average.
Do you, are you more of a, okay. Did you get at least like 70 innings with the team this year? Did you pitch yesterday or 2 days ago?
He got 46 innings.
Is this a Strini? No,
I would never.
You would never. Strini's actually super interesting because
I know, amazing. But he's more in the Prelander Baroa class of pitchers.
Well, this is weird though. Command of the slider is good, and
yeah,
like
Joe Boyle has good command of his slider.
I think it's the yips with his fastball. I think that's what's going on.
Maybe confidence could get him somewhere.
Right. Jonathan Cannon was the other one I thought you were going to mention.
No. It's Davis Martin.
Oh, Davis Martin. Oh, that's fun.
I mean,
it's not my guy.
My case for him is I think it's elite changeup.
Yeah, it can change.
Yeah, the weird kickstand change. That's very strange. But like if that was it, I would be like not that into him. But I do think that the slider plays. So you got a slider that plays, you got an elite changeup, and the four seam is actually above average.
Mm.
So if I could, you know, bequeath him something, it's, you know, advance that cutter next year. It's not great, but give yourself a second fastball that's at least average. And it flashes average. So that's what I want for Davis Martin is, you know, he comes to spring and talks about his cutter a lot and it's good. And then he's cutter, four seam, slider, change. It's a pretty good mix. The park's not terrible. He won't get in a lot of wins. So it's kind of an end game play, but I think they'll play him all year.
Uh-huh.
I think he's in the rotation.
I mean, I would hope so. The White Sox, it's kind of interesting to me. They do have a lot of options, you know,
but they're not going to spend money. They said
shocking. Benintendi, the most expensive contract they ever had. They're trying to reduce payroll. But I mean, yeah, they're going to get rid of Luis Robert Jr. over the offseason. They have to. So I'm with you on Martin. He's been inconsistent with it. Like start by start, it's like sometimes a slider becomes a thing and that slider can be good. And then he throws some that are just like, oh, no, no, that's not it. I want the fastball to be a little bit better before I would lean into it more for Davis Martin. But he could turn into a Carrasco type of like changeup slider. They're both great. And then he's just sneaking in those fastballs as much as he can. Back when, the thing about Carrasco I remember is just bad P-Val. It would always be negative. I'm like, that's all I had. That's all I had, guys. but no, I'm actually more intrigued by Sean Burke, who in 2023, I remember putting out a tweet being like, who's the number six guy for the White Sox? And everyone's like, I don't know. There's no number six. There's nobody. So then the White Sox are like, no, we think it's going to be Sean Burke. Yeah, Sean Burke. Sean Burke's the guy. And then he hurts his shoulder and then doesn't show up for ages. And he finally made his MLB debut on the 10th. He got three innings of relief. We got the first start of Sean Burke. I kind of dig this. It's like it's a four-seamer slider curve over the top. And it's a solid four-seamer. It's a solid slider, solid curve. And he actually has the intent to go Blake Snell blueprint with him. You give him more time, and that can actually turn into, yeah, this is a solid starter. This is a guy who can just execute like this and make that work.
IVBA on the on a 7-foot extension, 4-seam, five. That's pretty good.
And then you have a whiffable slider, and then the curve that was slightly under 60% strike rate, but like
87-mile-an-hour slider. Definitely. But how much of that was in the? Let's see, yeah, it was still 87-mile-an-hour slider and 95 velo in the start. So
yeah, it's a fun one. Someone at least was like, "Oh, hey, you are a thing."
Minus 14 on the curveball and 80 miles an hour on the curveball. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I would also wish a two-seamer or cutter upon him.
But, yeah. I mean, I think of this as the Severino blend, so I'd actually imagine a changeup would be the thing. And watch, of course, the Tampa Bay Rays are finally going to live their prophecy of trading for Bailey Falter. They're going to trade for Bailey Falter, you know.
Oh, and yeah.
They have to. He's an extension guy with that needs a changeup, and he doesn't have a changeup, and they're going to trade for him and teach him a changeup. There you go.
One thing about Burke is a penchant for homers in the minors.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know how much stock to put in it, but fairly since he got to Double A, he has not had a home run per nine rate below 1.3, basically.
Yeah, it's not good. You don't want that. Did you have anyone else on your list that you wanted to talk about before I give the final one, which is silly, but we're going to talk about him anyway.
Oh no, I lost him. It was Tyler McGill, Nina Rippins, and Davis Martin. No, that's it.
All right. So I'm going to tell you guys my last one after this break. So if you have been following this, you might know who this guy is. If you've been trying to be competitive the past couple weeks, and that would be Frankie Montas, who we pretty much was just like, nah, man. You know, since the Yankees trade with the Athletics, what, like 22, I want to even say? Didn't do much in 2023 and 2022 after the trade. And then, maybe it was 23. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. He was just completely thrown away. Then the Reds got him, didn't do much. Went to the Brewers, and now he's not only just throwing harder, he's locating cutters, sliders, splitters down effectively. He just had 20 whiffs last night against the Phillies.
They've really de-emphasized the slower slider.
Yeah, and cutter has been a lot sharper for him. He does throw two fastballs, fastball, four-seamer, and sinker. And we're seeing that four-seamer get a ton of whiffs lately as well.
It's a seam-shifted sinker that, you know, he didn't have a sinker before. And I think he got it by accident. I think he just like, played around with the grips until he got a seam-shifted sinker.
That's amazing. He had one with the Athletics. I remember this completely.
That's why I'm saying he did.
Oh my gosh. And then so there's the old guy that's like, all right, he's going to get innings likely with the Brewers next year. So I believe it was a 2-year deal with the Reds. Maybe it was a 1-year actually at 20-ish mil. But I think that Montas is doing something completely different with the Brewers now. That does showcase, hey, look, not only have I been this guy that throws 90 pitches in a game, but I can get whiffs now. And it's kind of rare to see that. it's a long shot that this is going to stick for a full season after just doing this for about a month or so. But we don't normally see this from guys like Montes, who completely like fall off and take 2 years to kind of redefine themselves and get swing strikes while also being the veteran that is able to navigate through six innings.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see him having a better year next year. He's also not under contract next year.
Right. He's a free agent.
I could see it mattering a little bit in terms of wins, in terms of, you know, his homer rate kind of fluctuates a little bit.
Sure.
So, you know, the right park might be a good fix for him. But he's a little bit different of a player than we've been talking about. One thing I do want to do real quick is change the title of this to players outside the top 100 that could maybe jump into the top.
Oh, 100. Yeah, right.
Because I don't think we've talked about anybody that was 50 through 100 either. So,
well, no, it was Zach Gallen and Logan Webb.
Yeah, right. So,
who is a guy who's at like 80 right now? That's on your list.
One guy, Osvaldo Bido.
He's at 80?
He's at 71.
Or like around there? Wow, 71.
So, in 63 innings. So, but yeah. I think he could jump into the top 50. I mean, he's got a nice home park. He's got two fastballs. We've talked about him some.
Yep.
There's plenty of other names you could cheat on, but DJ Hertz is 86.
Yeah, I don't trust that he's going to be consistent enough with the changeup
and the command.
But I hope so. With him, and I'm just trying to look. There obviously are the injured guys. You know. Here's a name. I know this is going to be crazy. I think Sandy Alcantara can be in the top.
Yeah. I saw your tweet. He's back up to the high 90s again, huh?
I threw 99. I was actually just the other day being like, oh man, is Sandy Alcantara going to be top? Yes, he is. He is going to be back. And here's the thing too. I know this is off tangent really. I mean, I guess it is technically inside of it, but am I crazy when I think Sandy Alcantara coming looking healthy out of camp, not like delayed or anything, he's there, it's like he's throwing spring training like nothing happened, that I trust his health more than the guy who just went like 200 innings or 180 innings this past year? Is that nuts?
The one problem is that until they step spring is a gray area. I would say until they step on the mound and start a pitch, there's always the chance, start a game, there's always a chance that they have a revision.
Yeah. Right. We saw that with Means. We saw that with Means.
We saw it with Reagan's.
There it is. Yeah. Oh, right. There's that. Reagan's didn't get back, though, did he? Or was
that's
it?
That's what I'm saying. If you don't get back.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So
yeah,
spring
yeah.
is a gray area. So if he's starting in spring, is he demonstrating he's back and everything's fine? Yeah. Then probably. You also just wonder how many innings they'll give him. And we've seen guys like, you know, Glasnow came back from surgery and then other things went bad. But Sandy was not necessarily a Glasnow type before the surgery.
Sure.
I mean, he was generally healthy otherwise. So,
right.
Yeah.
He was the pinnacle
over under on innings for Sandy next year is. It's a wild one because he seemed like a workhorse and then he was done. So I put the over under at like 125.
Oh, I'd probably put it at 140.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the
it'd be bad again. So, you know, anything.
The Marlins are a weird team because they tried to play really slow with Yuri. Didn't work. And they didn't care really for Sandy and didn't work. And I don't know. I mean, look at
you keep thinking that Edwin is going to get hurt any second, and he's just sort of.
Did you say Edwin?
Yeah, Edward. Sorry,
Edward. Okay, I was like, I honestly, with the way that they walk guys, I get it.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's an interesting conversation we're going to have, I'm sure, throughout the spring. I think my takeaway from this year has been the text that that Colette, I think I maybe sent you, was the. What was it about? How many guys were there? 100 or so?
Colette sent the earned auction values for starting pitchers this year. And he had, in the top 40 pitchers this year.
Yeah.
9 of them were drafted in the top 100 ADP. And so you'd expect,
oh man,
you'd expect that number to be a little different.
Right. So
we're sort of we're third right on our.
Well, on our the IP. Point of the matter though is so much of the discussion, really tying this whole thing together about who makes it to the top 50, it's volume. The hardest thing that we do as analysts is predict volume. We try and say this guy is an injury ding. Oh, Chris Sale. Okay, Sandy. Great. He's about to win.
Sandy, 200 innings, 200 innings, 180. Right. This guy's a workhorse.
Oh, yep. No. Chris Sale, I mean, unbelievable. Just had his career thing. Sale.
This guy.
Cole Raven's going to make 32 starts when that was the biggest thing against him. So you have everyone gets hurt, everyone doesn't get hurt. It's so difficult to figure out. And if you have a guy that's looking good out of spring, where the only ding on him is that you expect him at some point to be limited or not to, or to be injured, I am not caring.
Yeah, because you pretty much have, that's the expectation for everybody.
Exactly.
You can't even play the hard, they throw hard, they don't throw hard, because yes, there's guys who throw hard that got hurt, but there are also guys who don't throw hard that got hurt.
Exactly. So there's a lot of things that play with it. And the lesson to me is just, I look at a team I have in the finals right now. My first two pitchers on that team were Spencer Strider and Justin Steele.
Nice.
And I'm getting nothing from them. Nothing. This is the two pitchers I got in the first 10 rounds, right? So I got far in that one because of the guys I picked up along the way, the ones I went after. There's too much of an expectation of that, and get value at any point in the league. If you feel like this guy's just really good and he's going to be great in April and May, maybe that just continues. And that's awesome. And you'll tell yourself May 15th that you don't feel any less about them because of any sort of injury ding at that point.
I also think that there's places to get your quantity, and that you should try to find some place where, you know, if we're saying, you know, oh, the top guys get hurt and it's really hard to get the top guys right. Maybe you have to get a top guy or two. So you have to do some, but you're going to get a lot more bats. But then there's going to be some point where you're like, oh, I got to kind of switch to arms a little bit. And then you should kind of, and maybe that could be earlier than people expect given our conversation, but you want to get guys who are projected to have a rotation slot. And like, you know, you don't want to be picking in the guys who are the seventh starter for their team.
Oh gosh, no.
And then you can finish the draft with a bunch of hitters that you may drop if they don't win their job, or, you know, young guys or whatever. So there's a middle portion of your draft where you should get a ton of pitchers. If you have a bench, it should be 80% pitchers. If you know, like
the
quantity. You want to do quantity over, you want some quality. I'm not saying no quality, but you really want to hit quantity hard at a certain point and really fill up on these guys who are going to be ranked like, you know, 30 through 50 in our ranks. Like,
so traditionally, this is what I do, you know, is let's say you have your standard Yahoo League or whatever. It's like 10, you have 10 spots for hitters. I do 7 rounds of just hitters.
And you do one single pitcher in the top.
I generally don't do that. And then I go from 8 to 14. I do like 2 closers and 6 starters.
Yeah.
And I just go, let's get the guys I want here. And then after that, it's like, cool, I have 3 bats to figure out.
You can modify it a little bit. Like in our main event, we were planning on doing what you're doing pretty much, but George Kirby fell to us, I think in the 3rd or something. And so we were just like, okay, we'll take George Kirby. And then we saw Joe Ryan at a point where we wanted to get bats, and we were just like, okay, we'll take Joe Ryan.
Right.
We have the best pitching staff in our main event team, and we spent less on it than everybody else.
Right. So do you want to know something funny too? You brought up George Kirby. I'm going to be saying this the entire offseason. You're going to hear this in First Pitch Arizona. You're going to hear this in February. Wherever you were drafting George Kirby, all the hype that we have for him, just put it towards Michael King. Michael King is last year's George Kirby for the offseason.
All right.
I'm like tempted to put Michael King like in the top 10.
Wow.
Well, he's going to go like he's a quality star darling who misses bats.
Yeah.
For a winning, like such a good situation. The Padres love to push him over 90 pitches. That's a great defense, a great offense. Like, how you want Michael King?
It's a full arsenal. Yeah.
You want Michael King, guys. He's a command. He is like, you're talking about Nolan.
You're off of Kirby?
What's up?
I'm not off of Kirby.
I'm off of Kirby.
You're off of Kirby?
Kirby bothers me. Kirby is not that you like. He doesn't have an approach that like works in the way that we want it to. He's a control guy. He's also commanding like an approach that I don't think is the way to go. The slider is not going where it should go. Slider is just over the plate.
He's pretty predictable with the high four seams.
He goes to two strikes. It's in his own high four seamer.
Like when he throws in his own high four seams.
Guys are just hunting the four seamer, and then the slider isn't doing enough separation to then really mess them up and punish them when they just chase.
I just think he's a savant, man. He's going to figure it out.
It does. It's not even like I wouldn't even qualify it as a stuff four seamer. That's absurd.
No, it's not. No, I don't know why he loves it so much with two strikes.
Right? It's yeah, so I mean for me he's honestly like Holly, he's not an ace. Like that's a better than Toby. Like he's a 23% strikeout rate, but it's like you're not going to be that lovely 200 strikeout guy. You're not going to be a sub 3 ERA with a sub 1 WHIP kind of guy. You're going to be like 3.5, 115, 22% strikeout rate. Like it's great, but it's just you're not like, "Oh man, I know I'm going to get that stud Kirby night tonight." I just, not there. Maybe I'll figure it out. Okay.
If he gets to like, fourth or fifth round status, and I did three bats and then him, then I may have some Kirby.
Yeah. Maybe if he gets to the eighth round, then I've got my seven bats.
Yay. Who's your ace in these leagues?
Well, this past year it was Cole Reagans. So,
okay. That worked out.
Yeah. There you go. all right, fine, Nick. Whatever.
That's not happening in main events, though.
Well, I mean, it was this year. It was a lot of like, was it this year? There was some Joe Ryan in there, I think. Mm-hmm. There was I don't know, Imanaga. I got in like everything. Mm-hmm. I did also go after some others that obviously didn't work.
that's an idea for next week.
Oh my gosh, yes. Let's do a review of like
the ones we got wrong.
Beautiful. Can't wait for that one. Stay tuned for it. But until then, Eno, what are you working on? What are you going to be putting out?
Oh, I'm saying goodbye to Oakland, to the Coliseum in a piece this week. Hmm? What's that?
You're moving to New York. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not going back. Maybe after the kids graduate.
What? Seriously, though?
We were there for 8-9 years. We loved it, but... We just didn't want to raise our kids there.
Don't say that to me. I'm staying here forever, so.
Yeah. I love that city, man.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That would be my dream. All right. Looking forward to that article. Obviously, you're going to do such a great job with that one. For us, obviously, if you guys have questions to help with your team specifically, I stream every single weekday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern time to noon Eastern time. So come on by. But that is it for this episode of The Craft. Thank you so much to our guest, Eno Saris, for coming through today for the podcast. My name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.